And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of August 20th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, Mariah. So the topic that I'm all wound up about is not Iceland, which is actually green, but Greenland, which is actually a lot of ice. I'm sure you heard that story from when you were in fifth grade and Leif Erikson told everybody it was Greenland because he wanted to fool them or whatever. Recently there was a story came out saying that the administration was thinking about buying the country of Greenland. I'm sure you heard that, Mariah, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous because it's not like it was offered for sale.
Yes, it's just,
you know, Trump got in his head that wouldn't that be great to make this really awesome real estate deal that would put me in the legions of great presidents who bought, you know, gotten Alaska and what else did we get?
Louisiana.
Yes, right.
Well, technically,
this will make my name. I could put a big gold sign that says Trump in Greenland.
Well, you may or may not have noticed, but then just to add insult to injury, he tweeted out a picture of Trump Tower photoshopped onto the little village in Greenland of the
Did he?
And said, I promise not to do this to Greenland. Wink, wink, nod, nod. but anyway, Greenland, I was going to say, is technically owned by Denmark. Greenland is a part. Greenland edges up on the Arctic Circle. In Donald Trump's case, eventually he says something that makes sense. And I guess I am upset that the Trump's discussion of buying Greenland was passed over and trolled as being another ridiculous statement by a doddering old man. And how crazy could it be? All he thinks about is real estate, when in fact, in my estimation, there's much, much deeper issues that have to go with Greenland. And I think that Trump, in his own foggy way, is kind of absorbing some of those. As a case in point, I give you that, I guess, Mike Pompeo, who is our pretend Secretary of State, right? He's the guy who's supposed to be the Secretary of State. Last May, he gave a speech saying, looking forward to how great it's going to be when the Arctic melts and we have a shipping channel from the Atlantic to the Pacific, kind of like a modern-day Suez Canal, right? And that's a good thing. I think Trump has absorbed some of that stuff, and that's why he's talking about Greenland. But for me, discussions of Greenland bring up the whole topic of climate change above the Arctic Circle. And I think it's an important opportunity to at least put it, at least say this stuff, to talk about the Arctic. Right, Mariah, you think that's a way forward here? I've got a bunch of points to make.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny to hear the president who talks about climate change being a hoax and not believing that, you know, it's actually that the earth is getting warmer because there's still snow on it, right? And yet then out of the other side of his mouth planning on everything melting so he has access to the oil reserves and the minerals that are in these places that are melting, that he knows they are melting because the science tells him so, the same science he doesn't believe in. You know, I mean, and of course that's
a twisted logic there, right?
Yeah,
right? Self-serving, twisted logic.
And you know, that's what Exxon was going through, right? That's kind of how we found out that they knew about climate change, because they were sort of planning where they were going to drill. And I mean, that's a whole other topic we've talked about in other podcasts, but it's this funny disconnect between only believing the science when it's convenient for your business interests and downplaying the science when it's inconvenient or when it might actually be something we should be addressing for human survival.
Well, I guess the major point I'd want to make, and of course, we leave Donald Trump far behind in this discussion, right? Because this is just, that's just a pretext to talk about these things. I mean, Greenland and Denmark, and by virtue of owning Greenland, is an Arctic country, right? It owns seashore property on the Arctic Ocean, as does the United States, Canada, Norway, Finland, and most importantly, Russia. The North Pole has been, all through the Cold War, was a battleground, right? American subs, the Russian subs, they'd go back and forth under the North Pole. I'm old enough to remember when it was a big deal that the nuclear-powered sub Nautilus surfaced through the ice at the North Pole to prove that it could go to the North Pole and shoot a missile at the Russians anytime it wanted to, right? So the whole Arctic region is one that has been, during the Cold War, very politically charged. And as the Arctic ice melts, will only become more politically charged. I think that there's, I read an article somewhere, I'd have to dig it up, that China is trying to buy an island off the coast of Finland somewhere so that China can become an Arctic country, own property on the and have a territorial claim in the Arctic. And so when the United States considers buying Greenland, it is a huge geopolitical move, right, that has a lot of consequence. I think that so there's like five or six ways to contemplate this. Number one is that if Greenland is on the front line of climate change, right? There's articles, you can see them all over the place now, where the ice in Greenland is melting at an amazingly fast rate, higher than predicted. There's something where it said there were like 12 billion tons of water melted in a single day in early August, right? It's all just this ancient ice is just melting away very quickly. That if all of Greenland melted, which it seems to be on track to do, sea levels would rise 20 feet because all that ice is on top of land. This is the thing we're talking about buying, right? So this rapidly shifting place. And of course, as that ice melts, it's going to, as you alluded to, Mariah, it's going to reveal mineral wealth. It's going to reveal new shipping routes. I mean, one of the things that I'll put up a link to it, that all of the countries that border the Arctic Ocean, of course, have a 200-mile territorial limit, just as the United States does. But the standard treaty for those 200-mile territorial limits extend from the continental shelf, which, of course, is under the water, well out to sea. And based on that, all the different countries that are in the Arctic, I mean, there are several cases where those continental shelf claims are in conflict, right? Everybody can't own it. And we're heading into a world where everyone's going to be basically fighting over the Arctic. There'll be political stress over the Arctic, and it's a scary time. And I guess I was very unhappy that all of the major news outlets basically skipped over it. They all treated the whole question as trolling Donald Trump for being a fool, and everyone completely ignored the geopolitical implications of any country taking over another country. I don't know. I mean, does that make any sense, or is that?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's definitely, from what I've read, it's definitely whoever. If the United States were to get Greenland, it would certainly cause kind of a, you know, massive shift in the sort of political arena of, you know, global politics.
Right. And I think
there's a lot to think about there.
I mean, we're heading into it. We're heading into this heightened tension no matter what, right? Because climate change is coming. Greenland's melting. You can already sail the Northwest Passage pretty much in the summertime. And presumably soon enough, it'll be all year long. You can sail the Northwest Passage. That is just another opportunity for conflict as a consequence of climate change. And it's a scary thing. I think that I'm just going to say that there were lightning strikes at the North Pole, right? And this is now back to the weather in the Arctic, proof that things are going bad above the Arctic Circle. I mean, classic thunder and lightning is due to hot, moist air rising, right? That's why you get it in the summertime. You get unstable air, unstable moist air moving around. You end up with thunderstorms. The fact that that could happen 300 miles from the North Pole is a telling, disturbing fact, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and, you know, just to sort of, I mean, of course, all these, the weather changes are all telling and disturbing, but one thing that goes to, relates back to Greenland and some of the resources available there, there's an interesting piece that we're reading in Scientific American, and, or actually it might have been, yeah, I think it was in Scientific American, but the point they made was that, so, you know, we're talking about drilling for oil in the Arctic, right, as things happen. And then as the ice chunks calve off of Greenland, it actually makes it incredibly dangerous up there because these big, huge chunks of ice are kind of floating off into the ocean and heightens the danger between in an already dangerous prospect of capturing oil. And so I think that's oftentimes one of the things that I think about is, what's the world that I want to see? And a world where you're sort of, the way you get your fuel source is wrought with danger is not the future I want to see at all. You know, I know that takes us a little bit far off from the lightning, but I just wanted to
well, no, I think, I think that's the major point, is that these, that Trump's sort of happy-go-lucky attitude, the media's basically obliviously ignoring the issue, puts us at risk of not comprehending just how enormous these consequences are, the decisions we're making by not doing anything, right? And we're heading into a world where, right, your drilling rigs are going to have to be dodging ice flows as they come off the Greenland ice pack, right? And lightning strikes on your at the North Pole. Anyway, so there you go. When you see TV commentators rolling their eyes about Trump buying Greenland, yell at the TV and say, hey, you're missing the major point, right? Trump is a lost cause. Media is not getting it. They're not doing their job of discussing this at the level it requires. So, okay, I'm going to put that down. I'm done with that. There's a couple other things that I wanted to point out. One is that our hero, our climate superhero, Greta Thunberg, is on her way to New York City. We talked a lot about this over the last couple of weeks. Of course, thumbnail sketch of Greta Thunberg is she's maybe 17 years old now, started the climate, the school strike for climate about a year ago, has become an international figure, a lightning rod, and basically has sort of nucleated all this pent-up energy, right? She became the focal point of it. She is coming to New York for organized climate strikes on September 20th. We'll come back to that. But she's currently sailing across the Atlantic in a 60-foot sailboat, right, to avoid the carbon dioxide emissions from flying. And God bless her.
Renewably powered.
Renewably powered. I mean, I tried to follow. It's at Greta Thunberg. I mean, she's, I guess they're about halfway across the ocean now. Some of the initial tweets said, you know, things are fine. Nobody's seasick yet. But, I mean, I cannot imagine being in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean in a 60-foot boat. I mean, that would be terrifying. Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah, I know. More power to her.
More power to her. They did have, they had a drone. I guess one of the pictures I saw online was they have a drone that flies off the airplane and they can take a picture of the boat sailing across the North Atlantic, sort of romantic pictures of the Malalia, I think it's called, right? Anyway, the name of the boat. But Greta Thunberg is coming to New York. So I guess that'll be sometime in late August in preparation for the climate strikes of the week of September 20th to the 27th. I'm right. So I guess this is now an opportunity to beat the drum for the idea that if you're in the sound of my voice, you should be thinking about finding a climate strike activity on September 20th. Friday, September 20th seems to be the big day. I know there is an event planned for Boston. There's probably events planned for other places, right? We'll put up a link. But, I mean, it's not even clear to me what's going to happen on that day. I don't know if you know, Mariah, but
the idea is, in the spirit of Greta Thunberg, to walk out of your workplace, right? To, while we have the ability to choose to walk out instead of being forced due to, you know, some sort of a climate like hurricane or rising sea levels, while we have the ability to choose to walk out of work, make that choice, make that statement now, to show how serious you are about addressing climate change and stopping its effect on our economic progress.
There you go. So, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it is a strike, literally a strike. And these school children have walked out of school and they're calling for people. I mean, you talk about a general strike as being something you see in some third world country, right? So where all the shops are shuttered in some place and everyone's on strike. But I mean, basically, that's what they're calling for, right? Now that you mention it. They want people to leave their work, I suppose take a day off if you want to try and not get into too much trouble, but basically be out in the streets on September 20th. Right?
Yeah, and it's. I think that Bill McKibben is the one who's largely sort of spearheading this, even though it's inspired by Greta Thunberg.
Right. And in fact, now that you a good point, I got the link before. There's an op-ed in the Boston Globe from Bill McKibben today calling for adults to support the kids that are doing all right, but I mean, they need help. Right? And so, yes, to your point, Bill McKibben, I think, is continues to be a fulcrum of much climate action here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I mean, if you can think about September 20th, plan for that in advance to see if you can be there at some sort of a climate strike. You see, the other thing I just wanted to mention in passing is the following thing. It's not exactly a climate-related thing, but we have spoken often enough, Mariah, about environmental justice and how climate, the solutions to climate change need to be equitable and fairly parceled out because of the enormity of the economic change that will have to be connected to things like the Green New Deal. And so as background for that, it turns out that there is, the New York Times is putting up a series of articles basically reviewing the history of America. I guess you don't even want to say Black America. You want to say America, and claiming that, not claiming, I mean, pointing out that August 20th, 1619 was the day the first slaves arrived in Virginia. Full stop. Okay. That was before the Plymouth Colony was founded. So without going much farther than that, I would say it would be useful for all of us to try to comprehend and read some of that material to be more in tune with reality, I guess, right? And more in tune with the way things really are. And especially as climate hawks, that this is becoming, these topics of environmental justice are more and more germane to our conversation. The more we know about it, the better. So I'll stop there, right? So,
well put.
So let me say, we'll put up links to all of the stuff that we talked about on the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. Surprisingly enough, you can find this podcast on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can send to us an email in which you can lay out your concerns, questions, compliments, and general things that you think. What would you like us to talk about? Send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. That'd be great. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his research support. We want to say that you can listen directly to this show on your smartphone using all the modern podcast distribution apps. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcast. So we're going to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. So we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you for hearing me out.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.